Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 24. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Do you all have that? Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 24. Oh yeah, it's there. Very good, thank you. Vishat Maha Agnehe Purusha Ada Darshanat Asat Sabhayaha Vana Vasa Krichrataha Mridhe, Mridhe, Aneka, Maha, Ratha, Astrataha, Droni, Astrataha, Cha, Asma, Hare, Abhirakshitaha, Vishan Mahagnef Purushada Darshanad. Asad Sabhaya Vanavasa Krichrataha. Mridhe Mridhe Neka Mata. Mridhe Mridhe Neka Maharathastrato. Dromyastratashchasma Hare Bhirakshitaha. Vishan Mahagnef Purushada Darshanad. Asad Sabhaya Vanavasa Krichrataha. Mridhe Mridhe Neka Maharathastrato. Dronyastratashchasma Hare Bhirakshitaha. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanad. Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krichataha. Mridhe Mridhe Neka Maharathastrato. Dronyastratashchasma Hare Bhirakshitaha. Yeah, please chant. Suvarnavindu Prabhu. Vishan Mahagnef Purushada Darshanad. Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krichrataha. Mridhe Mridhe Neka Maharathastrato. Hare Pirakshitaha. Anyone else? Ladies? Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanad. Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Kritshvataha. Mridhe Mridhe Neka Maharatastrato. Dronyastratashchasmahare Pirakshitaha. Vishat. From poison. Maha Agnehe, from the great fire. Purusha Ada, the man eaters. Darshanat, by combating. Asat, vicious. Sabhayaha, assembly. Vana, Vasa, exiled to the forest. Kritshrataha, sufferings. Mridhe, again and again in battle. Aneka, many. Maha, Ratha, great generals. Astrataha, weapons. Droni, the son of Dronacharya. Astrataha, from the weapon of. Cha, and. Asma, indicating past tense. Hare, O my Lord. Abhirakshitaha, protected completely. Translation, Kunti Devi speaking to Krishna. After the battle of Kurukshetra, and as we can see from the last few words of this verse, after Ashvatthama's attempt to end the family line of the Pandavas by killing, who was the child in the womb of Uttara. So she says to Krishna, this verse is addressed to Krishna. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama. Purport. The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother, otherwise she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. They were put into trouble by Duryodhana and his party due to the kingdom, and each and every time the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once Bhima was administered poison in a cake. Once they were put into a house made of lac that was set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged into the vicious assembly of the Kurus, and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhana's party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with the man-eater demon Hidimba Rakshasa. But the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, all-powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done, there was the Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendant of the Kurus, Maharaja Parikshit. Om Gyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrestham Anamapi Shachiputram Atras Rupam Rupam Tasyagrajamurupurim Maturim Goshtavartim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagarna Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagarna Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. In her childhood, it seemed that Kunti was destined for a heavenly life, an idyllic life, beautiful, of high parentage. The son of Maharaj Kunti, she was high parentage. She was meant for princely or princessly happiness. She was so beautiful that she even attracted the attention of the sun god, who has so many beautiful but fiery women to deal with. If you might complain about some woman of being a fiery nature in the sun planet, they're all fiery in the literal sense of the term. But as it happened, her life was filled with distress. The first distress was sending away her first son in an episode which was later replicated. Or there may be many such episodes in the history of the world, but in the Bible we see the story of Moses. He was also put in a wicker basket and put in the water like that. Started with that, and it went on and on and on and on and on. She's not complaining by saying all these. She's just saying the most difficult things that happened actually to her sons, although she was the Vanavasa Kritchataha, the difficulties of living in the forest. She didn't personally do all that, but she was suffering from separation from her sons. So even though she was living comfortably in the palace, she was suffering separation from her sons and seeing the political whirling and swirling going on around her. So it was a very, very difficult life. And she's not complaining. She's actually praying. She'll pray after a few more verses. We'll see that she prays for more trouble. Vipada santuta shashvat. Tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yat syad apuna bhava darshanam. She's praying, let there be more difficulties, she prayed to Krishna, because when there are difficulties, we see you. Now you're going away, after all the difficulties solved by Krishna, now he's going away to Dwarka. But she's saying, better there be difficulties and then you'll stay. And then we'll see you. And if we see you, we don't see repeated birth and death. So this is a great lesson for all of us. We all have to deal with pain. Is there anyone who can say, no, it's ridiculous to say that I don't have any pain in my life. It's not possible. Some attempt was made like that in the life of Buddhadev, that he would be in his youth. He was sequestered in his palace with all pleasures and wasn't allowed to go out so that he could see how nasty the world actually is. But when he did go out, he immediately saw this world is full of suffering. And then he left his comfortable life and accepted all kinds of discomfort in order to try to find the solution for pain, which is inevitable. Life is meant for pain. Everyone has to deal with pain. But we should know that life in this world is meant for pain. As much as life in the spiritual world is meant for bliss, life in this world is meant for pain. And you may say, well, there are so many nice things in this world. But that contributes to the pain. The false promise of happiness contributes to the pain and is a source of pain. Just like a man and a woman unite for the sake of pleasure, but in course that pleasure will cease. If they're very happy together, that can change. Their love can turn to hate, or they have to suffer the pain of separation when one of them dies or goes away or whatever. There are so many ways that happiness does turn to misery. So we all have to consider how to deal with pain. Here, Kunti Devi, she thanks Krishna. What's she doing here? She's not complaining. She's saying, we went through so many difficulties. She doesn't even mention her own pain of losing her husband and losing her first child. She mentions the pain of her sons. And Bhima was poisoned and so many things. She's not giving a list of complaints, but she's expressing her gratefulness to Krishna for protecting her sons. So how do we deal with pain? She didn't complain that life is not fair. Why am I suffering so much? Why are we suffering so much? Why do we suffer? Why do we suffer? What is the answer given in Bhagavad Gita? Who or what is the cause of our suffering? Anyone? It's me. You know the verse? Purusha sukha dukkhanam. Anyone? Bhuktritve hetu ruchyate. We ourselves, the living being in this world who considers himself an enjoyer of it, is thus the cause of his own pains and pleasures, his own happiness and distress. Yeah, you should study Bhagavad Gita. There's a lot of good stuff in there. It's really worth knowing. I don't know if Prabhupada ever quoted this in the course of his talks, but it just strikes me as being such an important statement. Because we're all suffering, and we all have the tendency to try to blame it on the circumstances or blame it on someone else. It's not my fault. The last thing it could be is my fault, but Krishna says it is our fault. Well, I'm innocent. I was just walking down the road and someone came up and smashed a bottle over my head. I didn't do anything. No one in this world is innocent. No one in this world is innocent. Just by being in this world means that we are rebellious against Krishna. Cardinal sin. Have you heard of this? Cardinal sin from Catholicism. I don't know if they have that in Protestantism. Cardinal sins and venial sins. The cardinal sin is the very, very bad sin. And venial sin means the kind of thing that you go to the church and you say to the priest, in the confession, well, I told three lies and, okay, say three Hail Marys and finish. But a mortal sin, cardinal sin, that's very bad. So the root of all sin is deliberate turning away from Krishna. And then we go on life after life committing so many sins. There's so many sinful people. How many murders have I committed? I am a mass murderer. I confess to all of you. It means in the course of my lives, I must have murdered so many. I've had unlimited lives. How many people have I murdered? How many animals have I murdered, directly or indirectly, for the sake of eating? Maybe just for the sake of pleasure. Some people kill animals out of some perverse pleasure. So we've all done so many sinful activities, and we all have to suffer. Why do we suffer? We don't suffer, and it's not just that it just happens, but we experience suffering because we have caused suffering. It's the law of karma. You may say, well, I've lived a very good life. Yeah, but what did you do in your previous life? Even many people think, I've lived a very good life. They don't even know what is good and what isn't good. It's just like in this country, it's considered completely normal to eat meat, kill animals. And increasingly, as the degradation continues, to have sex life out of wedlock, it's considered, didn't do any harm. Didn't do any harm. But it's sinful. And it causes suffering. Therefore, we have to suffer. And we should know that whoever causes suffering to us is an instrument in giving us the karma that we deserve, the karmic reaction that we deserved. The real cause of our suffering is our own sinful activities. Now, this might say that people will protest about this and say, well, you're saying that children who are abused, they are the cause of their own suffering. But then think, why are some children abused and some are not? And if you think on the cosmic scale, what's going on? What goes around comes around. Now, that doesn't mean that you can think, well, okay, I'll go and abuse so many children. I always wanted to abuse children. You see, they'll cut that out on YouTube and make a clip. I always wanted to abuse children, and now I understand philosophically that it's a good thing for me to do, because then I'll be relieving them from karmic reactions. It's more complex than that. It's not that by causing suffering you're doing good to someone. You're giving them you may be giving them what they deserve, but in becoming the instrument, because it's all arranged by Krishna, because someone has the bad desire to hurt someone, he's appointed, even though he doesn't know it, to give suffering to others. But that doesn't mean that he becomes free from the reaction of causing suffering to others. If that was so, then there would be no karmic reactions, because by giving suffering to others, you prepare it for yourself in future. So in this way, it's a great chain of sinful activities. No one has a license to inflict pain on others. Actually, some people do, don't they? It's just like the police have in certain situations. They have to apprehend criminals by force if necessary. The hangman has, but on the karmic scale, no one has the license to whimsically, arbitrarily inflict suffering on others. So instead of dwelling on the suffering that we are, oh, why, Why am I suffering so much? It's all the world is bad. There can't be any God, otherwise so is there so much suffering. We should understand this, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and get on with our life. Get it behind us, any suffering that is there. Anything someone does to us, we can think, okay, they did it. If we keep it in our mind, then we continue to suffer, on and on and on and on. Now you may say, we're talking here about Kunti and the Pandavas, the first words here are Vishan, from poison, Vishat. Well, that was Bhima. And Bhima, he was in the forest and then in the palace of Virat Raja. So 13 years, he was boiling inside, wanting revenge. Not for his own sake. He wasn't so... He thought the poisoning with cake, it was just like a joke for him. For he was so powerful, he just laughed it off. But he was so angry and bearing it in his heart, what was done to Draupadi. Otherwise, the Pandavas could have tolerated so many outrages that the Dhritarashtras, headed by Duryodhana, the Kurus, did to them, but the insulting of Draupadi, that was the one thing they couldn't tolerate. They had to be punished. So it's not that we simply forgive everything. And also, these talks of forgiving and forgetting and tolerating, that is suitable for, especially for spiritualists, but those who are administrating the state, they have to inflict punishment. You can't just say, well, this man is, he premeditatedly murdered his wife and children. Or let's put it the other way, because we want to be equal to women. This woman premeditatedly murdered her husband and three children. And say, oh, okay, let's forgive them. No, it's the duty of the state to inflict punishment. It's the duty of the king in Vedic culture to inflict punishment. That is his duty, to curb rogue elements within society. And prisons are there, and punishment is there to keep the rogue elements, to check them, and to keep them under control, and with the idea that they should become reformed, or at least they will learn a lesson from their punishment, or others will be afraid. They'll be afraid to perform such activity. Kshatriyas, they protect from hurt. They protect the citizens from pain. We learn in the Bhagavatam, fourth canto, how when Vena Maharaj was killed, because he was so cruel, he was killed by mantra by the brahmanas. But then immediately the thieves and rogues took advantage that there's no king, and they started causing chaos in the state. And we see that in America, it's happened several times. If the police go on strike, then the thieves have a party. It happened in New Orleans when the whole city was flooded, and there was law and order broke down, and then the rogue elements, which actually even many who might be considered ordinarily as ordinary good citizens, they took advantage to loot shops and homes and so on. This kind of thing happens in India quite often because most of the rain comes during 3 or 4 months of the year and floods are quite common, but you never hear. I never heard of looting, mass looting, I guess because America's more civilized, right? And India's not very civilized. That's the propaganda that comes out. Anyway, to understand all these things, it's quite complex. Karmano hyapi bodhavyam bodhavyam chavi karmana akarmanas cha bodhavyam gahana karmano gatihi. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very complex and difficult to understand exactly what is karma, akarma, vikarma. It's very, very complex because everything we do has an effect, and it affects in so many ways. At every second we're doing something. Nahi kaschit kshanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit. We can't not do anything, even for a moment. We're always doing something, and everything we do has an effect on multiple levels. Just like, okay, let's have a little deep breathing session here. Breathe in. You breathe in, and then so many germs may be getting caught in your nose and killed. And there's some karmic reaction there. Walk on the street. Just walking on the street. And then you'll tread on so many ants. Even walking on the street, you become a debtor to the civil authorities who made the street. We are all dependent on others. So it's all very, very complex, but we should understand the basic principle that we ourselves are the cause of our own suffering and enjoyment in this world, but we should understand that the enjoyment in this world or even the hope for enjoyment in this world is a cause of suffering. And turn our attention to Krishna. And then what happens when we do that? Tatenu kampansu samikshamano bhunjana evatma kritang vipakam hridvagvapubir vidatandamaste jiveta yo muktipade sadaya bhak. When one stops thinking that, oh, I'm suffering so much. So when we stop complaining and accept that I'm suffering for my past sinful activities. Okay, but let me go on hearing and chanting about Krishna, accepting my lot. I don't know, accepting my fate. There's an old usage of the word lot. It means what is allotted to me. It's an old English usage. To accept our lot, to accept our fate. And just go on serving Krishna. The translation of this verse given by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So what we're looking at is stoicism. I presume you have that word in your language also. Yeah. Because it comes from the ancient Greeks, which is the foundation of Western civilization. The Stoics were a group of Greek philosophers who had the outlook that, well, whatever happens, however bad it is, don't complain, don't react, just take it and go on with life. So what is being recommended here is enlightened stoicism, not merely just to accept my fate. Oh, no, you don't go, because that's not stoicism. But you just accept. Excuse me, sir, I've got some bad news for you. Your whole family was killed in a car crash. Okay, thank you for telling me. I have to go to work now, so I don't have any more time to discuss it. Not so easy, is it? But that would be the ideal stoic response. But Krishna consciousness means more than stoicism. It means to look up above the suffering of this world and look up to the spiritual world and aspire for the spiritual world by worshipping Krishna. Stoicism in Krishna consciousness can mean that, okay, I took to Krishna consciousness, but still I have so many problems and this and that. But then you look and see, oh, actually, I was suffering so much before I came to Krishna consciousness. That's why I came to Krishna consciousness, right? That was a major factor. And actually, although there are so many problems, even as I'm trying to serve Krishna, but even the worst times I have in Krishna consciousness, it's so much better than anything I ever experienced. Even the best sense gratification in material existence, it's not worth pursuing, because life in Krishna consciousness is so much better that even the worst times are better than the best times without Krishna. So this can help us go on and not succumb to the temptations of Maya. Why are you suffering? Why are you going through so many difficulties? I will give you a nice home, a nice family, a nice dog, a nice job. Everything will be very nice. Maya calls. But we should know. That's Maya. That's not. Maya has so many promises. And this is the mentality that we need to help keep us going, because that's what Maya does. Maya's always calling. Come on, come on, come on. You've had enough of all this Krishna consciousness. No, I must stay. I must stay with Krishna. Even for my own self-interest, I should know, even if I don't have any love of Krishna, I should know this is for my own self-interest. Even if you think I'm suffering now and I can enjoy immediately, then we have to think of the terms Shreyas and Prayas. What is for my ultimate good, that is Shreyas, and what is Prayas, that means what appears to be for my immediate good. And we're always advised to pursue Prayas and not, sorry, to pursue Shreyas and not Prayas, even materially speaking. If one wants to get a better situation, one has to accept some difficulty. If you want to be a medical doctor, you have to go through many years of hard work studying. And even after you become a medical doctor, you have to put in a lot of work. And you have to see a lot of suffering. Anything worthwhile, even materially, requires some sacrifice and some difficulty to attain. Sometimes we see people win the lottery and then they get so much money all of a sudden. Usually that, in most cases, that windfall becomes a source of great misery for them. They didn't work to get it. They don't know how to handle it. So our process is not merely stoicism, but we see tatenukampan, anukampa. We see it's Krishna's mercy. We see difficulties and reverses as Krishna's mercy, meant to help us come up and become strong in Krishna consciousness. Instead of blaming others or our circumstances for our problems, we can see this is Krishna's helping me. It may be hard to understand why Krishna does it. Just like it was difficult for understand, even Bhishma, the greatest authority on Dharma, he himself said that, how can we understand how Yudhishthira and the Pandavas, they were such good people, such noble intentions, And they had to suffer so much throughout their lives, even though Krishna was on their side. And Bhishma's conclusion is that we cannot understand the plan of the Lord, but we should know that it's ultimately for the good of everyone. So with this attitude, we can take reverses in life, which are inevitable, as Krishna's mercy. This verse, Tatenu Kampan Su Samikshamano, Srila Prabhupada writes, while quoting it in the Nectar Devotion, that this should be the guiding principle for devotees. Exactly the words I don't remember, but it's like that. Reading from the purport to this verse given in the BBT edition of the Bhagavatam, which is, this was translated by some of Srila Prabhupada's scholarly disciples, and this is taken from Srila Sridhar Swami's commentary on this verse. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Supreme Lord, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord within his heart, with his heart, words and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. So it may appear like suffering. It is suffering, but it's curative treatment. It's just like a medical treatment, may not be very pleasant, but it's undertaken with the understanding or the hope that it will lead us to a better future. It will cure us. I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 12, text 13 to 14. Coming again to the point of pure devotional service, the Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two verses. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances. That's helpful, isn't it? Because circumstances in this world are so disturbing. But we should remember that we're trying to cultivate pure devotional service and remain undisturbed. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to his own past misdeeds. So it is better to suffer than to protest. Better to suffer than protest. Unusual advice. Advice for a transcendentalist. Again, this should be understood in respect to oneself, but if others, just like Bhima, he could tolerate so many outrageous activities of the Kurus, but he didn't tolerate Draupadi's being insulted. So we may suffer ourselves, without protest. But then if other devotees are being mistreated, then we should protest. But that's quite a meditation for our own life. Better to suffer than protest. Any questions, please? Yeah, I saw Lomanchita's hand. Okay, let's go to Suvarna Bindu with the mics there. Then we can pass it back.
Hare Krishna. So this verse, Purusha Sukha Dukhanam, it explains that living entities is the cause of his suffering. But in the purport, Prabhupada said it's not living entity, but the cause is
the material nature. If we see the what are the first two lines of that verse? What are the first two lines? The Sanskrit. Poktridvehetu. What are the first two lines in Sanskrit? Yeah, they're the last two lines. What are the first two lines? You can look that up. It's about Prakriti and No, it's not Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhukte Prakriti Janguna. That's another verse. That's just next to it. Karnanguna Sangosya Sadasadyoni Janmasu. That's all linked together. That the Purusha, the Jiva, is stuck in material nature. And Bhunte Prakriti Janguna. And he enjoys and suffers according to the modes of material nature. The cause of that is his association with the modes of material nature. And thus he gets good and bad bodies. And this Purusha Sukha Dukhanam, that explains it more. I'm just not remembering. Bhuktritve. If you look up the word Bhuktritve, you'll get it. That only appears once, as far as I know, as far as I can remember, in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. Karya karanam kartritve, hetu prakriti ruchate, purusha sukha dukhanam, bhuktritve hetu ruchate. Karya karana kartritve. So these are the work, the cause of the work, and the performer of the work. Karya karana kartritve, hetu prakriti ruchate. So it's all affected. It all goes on within the sphere of material nature, but the actual cause of one's own sufferings and distresses are the jiva. Now, if we say, what is the cause? This is all Sankhya philosophy. What is the cause of the pot, a clay pot? This is the classic example given in Sankhya philosophy. The cause is the clay, right? Without the clay, there can't be a pot. But then we say the cause is the potter, because unless the potter shapes the clay and fires it, and then there won't be a pot. And then we could say, take it further and say, well, the cause of the potter doing that work, we could say it's the need for him to support his family. And we'd also say the cause of the pot is the need of people for pots. So there may be multiple causes. Ultimately, sarva karana karanam, at the back of everything is Krishna. So looking at it from different perspectives, we can say there are different causes. The cause of our own happiness and distress in this material world is ourself. Because karanam guna sangasya, because we have accepted to come in contact with the material modes of nature. But ultimately we are transcendental to the modes of nature. So all this suffering and distress, it's all illusory anyway. What was your question, by the way? So what I'm saying is, when we discuss about the cause and different statements that are made about cause, we have to understand that it's very complex, because there are multiple causes. And looking at it from different perspectives, we can say this is the cause, or that is the cause. It depends what we're stressing on. In one sense, there is no happiness or distress in this material world, because it's all illusory. It's like being chased by a tiger in a dream. There's no actual unhappiness. But because we identify with the situation in the dream, we take it as real, but it's not. Go on.
Yes. In the purport, Prabhupada actually he said it's not the living entity, but it is the body which causes
the what?
It's the body.
What does it say? Can you read it?
Yes. It.
The body. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's exactly the opposite, which is said in the translation of the verse.
In the verse.
Oh, how can we understand?
Well, that's what I said. There are multiple perspectives. While it's said that the living entity is the enjoyer or the sufferer, Srila Prabhupada's, well, that's also there. The karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti ruchate. Here's the Sanskrit says, in the first line, or the first two lines, the way it's shaped in our book, that the hetu, the cause of everything that's going on, is material nature, because it couldn't happen unless it's taking place within material nature, just like the clay is the material cause of the pot. But the cause of the suffering and distress is the living being who identifies. Because he identifies with that, therefore he suffers or enjoys. So the point is that we should stop identifying with it, then we don't suffer or enjoy. Bhunkte prakriti jan gunan. We suffer because we identify with material nature. So that's what's being taught, to stop identifying with material nature, and then we no longer suffer. It's actually material nature which is the cause. In one sense, we can say that. But we can think, well, I don't really have anything to do with it. Then we, bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. There are two hetus given in the, two causes given in the same verse. So when we stop thinking, I am a bhokta, I am an enjoyer of the world, then we stop suffering and enjoying. It's the attitude of, I am an enjoyer of this world, which causes our happiness and distress within it. We should study Bhagavad Gita. This 13th chapter, it comes right after the, which chapter? 13th chapter deals with the kshetra-kshetragya jnana, a lot of discussion about the paramatma. What's the 12th chapter? Devotional service, bhakti yoga. So right after that, then you think that, oh, okay, that's great. And then Krishna goes right into analytical study of our situation within this material world. And that continues into the 14th chapter with an analysis of the modes of material nature, which goes on again right up to in the 17th and again in the 18th chapter. So even after establishing that bhakti is supreme, Krishna, he analyzes a lot the nature of this material world and how we're entangled within it. Anything else? You were going to ask something, Lo Manjit.
Then the question is, who is suffering?
Who is suffering? It's all illusory suffering, so the question doesn't really arise, does it? In a dream, who suffers? When you're chased by a tiger, who suffers? It's the imagination that I'm being chased by a tiger. You feel as if I'm suffering because we identify with it. We don't actually suffer. But it feels like it's real. If you're watching a movie and someone comes up with a knife and stabs someone, you feel, oh, that's terrible. Everyone groans. They come out. People come. The aim of a movie, especially these story movies. Most of them are stories, right? Not even maybe the documentaries. They're meant to affect your emotions, but it's only because you identify with it, because you agree to accept the illusion that light being displayed on a screen with accompanying audio sounds, because you agree. You buy into the obvious illusion that there's actually something going on. Therefore, you identify with the man kissing the woman and then the woman killing the man, and you feel joy and sorrow. But on the who's experiencing it? You only experience it because you agree to falsely identify with it. It's nothing to do with you, whatever happens on the screen, and it's not really happening at all. It's difficult for us to understand this because we're all committedly part of this illusion, and we can't imagine anything else. We've been watching the movies so long, we can't imagine that there's any other kind of existence. It's the old red pill, blue pill thing, right? You don't know because you don't go to movies. I don't go to movies either, but it's quoted so many times. It's a good example, actually. You all know that red pill, blue pill, the Matrix. You don't know. 90% of your life is wasted. There was a movie which came out how long ago? About 10 years ago, 12 years ago, called The Matrix, which I didn't go to see, but devotees discussed it so much that I got the gist of the plot. That we're all living in a big illusion, and actually we're all little blobs in some chemical test tubes or something like that. And if you take a red pill, you get to see the reality. But if you take a blue pill, you can go on seeing the world as it is and remain in the illusion. So most people prefer to take the blue pill. It's like Maya, choosing to see the truth or choosing to see Maya, and it's a metaphor at various levels, which has been claimed by Christians and Buddhists and all kinds of people. As you see, they're showing our philosophy. Anyway, it didn't work for you. They didn't translate it in Hrvatsky, it seems. Not a big enough market, maybe. But they did. Okay. Subtitles, yeah. They really. I was in a plane once going from I don't know where to where, and I said, they show so many stupid. On the big screen, they showed a guy jumping out of a skyscraper and flying through the sky, and I saw all the people wondering, what is this? It's nonsense. People don't fly through the sky, some kind of Superman thing. Then I saw at the end of the movie, it said, The Matrix. I thought, well, that's it. That's the famous film. It's just nonsense. Another time, I don't watch these movies, but when it's right in front of you, you can't help seeing some bits of it. I saw something, what was it? Some kind of castle, and then again people flying through the air and all this, some weird creatures. I thought, why are all these people watching it? They're supposed to be intelligent people. At the end I saw, it came, what was that, the Harry Potter? people, they get so worked up about these things, super blockbuster movie. You see, they choose to go to a movie, which means they choose to be in an illusion within an illusion. Already life's an illusion. If you go to the movies, you deliberately buy into another illusion. Yeah. Wait a minute, please.
Thank you so very much. So even though we are not suffering, but we should try to keep the body as fit as possible.
We should try to keep the body as fit as possible for serving Krishna. Is that right? Yeah. Well, fit enough, not as fit as possible. And then you'll be all day doing exercise. Fit enough to do service. Not as fit as possible. We're not gymnasts. Anything else? Yeah, please pass it on.
Maybe you said that maybe police have a license for violence. What about Yamadutas? They also getting reaction for this, what they did?
Do the Yamadutas get a reaction for what they're doing? As far as I know, no. One very learned devotee, Gauriamat devotee, who I used to see often, he said, I don't know where he is quoting from, but he was from Madhva Brahmana background, and Madhva Brahmanas are generally very learned in Shastra. So he said the Yamadutas, they're Vaishnava Aparadis who take that form. I presume that he must have some source for that, because Madhvas are very strict on the point of quoting from Shastra. But I could ask him, I guess. He must be very old now. Maybe he passed away. I don't know. It's one of those things that could be researched. If you like, you can research it. There was a book I saw once Bhanu Swami was reading. It was by a mundane scholar who had studied. The book was about Yamaraj. It's a whole book on Yamaraj. So presumably he'd done his study. You could probably look it up and find it on Amazon. It's an English book. When I say Bhanu Maharaj reading a book, we usually think of Sanskrit or Bengali, but it was an English book. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.